welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan, and my trusty co-host Bill is has been eaten alive by shingles. So I don't know, not a big vaccine pusher, but I'll tell you what, if you have had chickenpox, and I don't care if you're not over 50, because apparently it doesn't, the virus doesn't care. I've met so many people under 50 who've had it, but it attacks your nerves. I always thought it was just a rash. Apparently there's more to it than that, and Bill is in week 3+ of this thing, and it is just not going away, actually. Pretty ugly. So there's my shingles commercial. In fairness to all those of you who are like me, who are like shingles mingles, you know, how bad could it be? Yeah, well, pretty bad. So let's see. Today we're gonna talk about climate change. I'm so excited. I love our climate change shows. And I realized we haven't done any environmental, really, like specifically on environmental issue shows for a while, which is obviously silly and wrong. So this is a layman's look at anthropogenic, got that in quotes, meaning man-made, global warming, with Kurt Stryker. And do we have him on the phone? Oh, we're calling him right now. All right, so we have him on the phone shortly. He's a retired school teacher who taught life, earth, and physical sciences. He's a master's degree and focused his studies on geology and specifically in the study of the ice ages. That'll be handy. He has a keen understanding of how and why climate changes and the environmental science of climate change and global warming. There's so much information that's censored to the general public, and I think we kind of already know that, regarding climate change. And you might be surprised how much the world has been brainwashed. I think if you listen to this show, you won't be surprised at how much the world has been brainwashed, but who knows? Maybe. Maybe not. Anyway, I think that you will learn a lot today, and hopefully the learning starts here pretty quick. What's happening? He's not picking up. That is awesome. So, let's see. I will text him now in real time. Please answer the phone. That's an easy one. And so, anyway, the fun goes on. What else do we have going on? Oh, the lawsuit for Prop 50 in California. So, they remember, we're not suing over, and I say we, using the term loosely, only because I have spoken with Mark Moisher about this, the attorney. So they're suing over the Voting Rights Act and about the racial gerrymandering. So if you have not followed that, I'll put a link on today's page, but really I've got the most information at ShastaGOP.com. And if you go to ShastaGOP.com, the Prop 50 scam page is still up. When you go there, there are a few things that are kind of interesting since we have a few seconds here. The interactive version of the post-Prop 50 maps is up there. I think you'd be, you know, if you have people who live in other places in California, you will see that, honestly, it's just gotten ridiculous. You know, the whole thing has just gotten ridiculous. The districts don't make any sense. And then the second link I have there, I called it interesting third-party site that includes more partisan detail and vote history. So it's davesredistricting.org, and then there's a very long, the rest of the URL is very long. But if you go to that site, it's fascinating. You can just scroll around and you can see the difference in the districts by voting, you know, so how many, you know, independents, Republicans. You don't have to click on it. It isn't a chart or a graph. It's just a list of items, and you can look at them one by one. You can have them all overlaid, and as you move your cursor around the map, those numbers will change, and you'll see some of the districts are just bizarre. I mean, the shape is bizarre. And you're thinking, really? You had to do that to get the right amount of people? Unlikely. So you can go back and forth between the maps we have now that were drawn by an independent commission and then those. So the calculus was that it was unlikely that if they sued over constitutional violations and the many, many things that were wrong with the process, that that would be dismissed by the courts. So they decided to jump in on the Federal Voting Rights Act and take it that route. So you had a Supreme Court decision recently regarding that on the Texas redistricting. So we don't know how all of that is going to play against our, you know, our situation. We just don't know. So let's see. We're not getting Kurt. So how about, why don't you pull one of my songs from my fun global warming thing? And I'll call him on my phone since I do not have Bill to, I do not have Bill, my trusty foil, to run my airtime with me here. I could make Alex just talk about nothing. Alex is like, yeah, that won't work.
I can talk about tons of stuff.
Well, there you go. This is your time. Oh, my gosh.
All right, I'm going to play Bon Jovi, Bad Medicine while you try and...
Oh, we like that one. That's a fun one.
All right, here we go. Winging it. I love it.
And of course, I had no plan B because I'm not really a plan B kind of person.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, it's just not my deal. So that's exciting. Super exciting. Not fired up about that. So our guest, Kurt Stryker, is somewhere off in the great beyond. I got his voicemail. Boo. So I'm going to give you an article back to Prop 50, so at least I can keep something consistent. So back to Prop 50, it was interesting because John Fleischman wrote an article about why Prop 50 passed in a landslide, and I don't know how many people really follow all of that stuff, but it was really kind of worth keeping track of because I do not think, regardless of where you live, I do not think this is just a California thing. I do not think that this is the only time it will happen, unfortunately. And who knows? Might be coming for you. So for all those people that thought that there were a lot of people who didn't vote, that happens all the time. You know, all this is so ridiculous. It'll never pass. You know, you always hear that. Yeah, it might. And if it did, that would be super bad. So he talked about a few things. So I'm gonna give you this article here. So Proposition 50 does exactly what critics warned it would. It has now sidelined California's Independent Redistricting Commission for congressional seats until 2032, and it has substituted a set of partisan maps designed to flip five Republican-held districts into reliable Democratic seats while shoring up Democrats in an equal number of competitive seats. So let's unravel that for people who don't follow this kind of stuff. We have 52 congressional seats in the state of California. And you're looking at nine of them in the current mapping. Nine of them are held by Republicans, which is obviously a very low percentage. So they felt the need to take five out and leave us with four Republican representatives. And people will say, well, other people could run. I mean, that doesn't mean that they can't run. No, it doesn't. But if you happen to kind of glance at the map, there's a green one. There's a green section at the top of the state. That's the easiest one to eyeball. It is now District 2 at the top of the state. So it's Modoc, Siskiyou, Shasta, you know that. But it goes all the way down to Marin County, and we've spoken about that before. So although that's ridiculous, and those people all have nothing in common, and there's no industry commonality, there is no social commonality, there's no tie with farming, it just doesn't make sense that all of that is grouped together. But the interesting thing is all of these seats were drawn for all is a big word. Many of these seats were drawn for specific legislators. So that one was drawn for Jared Huffman, who is currently the congressman in District 2. A Democrat, avowed socialist. He used to be the attorney for the Natural Resource Defense Council, who was part and parcel involved in the Central Valley water situation. So he hasn't done anything that would benefit the folks in Northern California with all their battles with water, and I'm sure he loves wolves. So all the things that we try to fight, he is busy undermining. So that's great. That is a plus or minus 25-point advantage to Democrats as that seat goes. So someone could run in that seat, but the likelihood of them being able to flip that seat to a Republican seat, basically kind of zero. I realize, you know, things happen, but you would have to get a huge percentage of Democrats to swing over. And I believe in this political climate, there isn't anybody who's that, optimistic, right? So then you look at the next district down, District 1, and you realize, okay, that's terrific, but that seat was cut for Mike McGuire, who is a state senator and president pro tem of the state Senate. And okay, so he has a huge advantage there, 11, 12 points. That would be worth jumping in on. The congressman for our area, Doug LaMalfa, is currently running in that district. So let's just say that the courts take a look at this on the 15th, because that's the magic day, and they decide that, there's possibility. How about that? I don't know if it has to be likelihood, but maybe there's a probability that that will go through, right? If, in fact, they think that the maps will be reversed from this new Prop 50 change, they may just say, look, you have to keep the same maps until we sort this out in court. But let's say they lose in court. That means in the next election, 2028, these weird maps would go in. So there's like a lot of stuff in play. This is not a done deal, and there are a lot of weird moving parts where, you know, I asked Mark Moisher in the show we did with him here a couple of weeks ago. I said, well, so, you know, what are the odds that this will get flipped? He's like, yeah, nobody can really give you that. Nobody knows the odds. So I was like, okay, good to know. So we watch. So that's kind of, you know, the seats, how the seats lay out. And that's happening in other places. So again, people think, well, you know, you can still run in those places. Yeah. But if it's advantaged, I would encourage you to scroll over the map and, you know, on that Dave's redistricting, mapping, thing. And you'll see that in most cases, it's 60, 70, sometimes 80%, Democrat. They made sure that it was very, very weighted. And, when that happens, like, to give you an idea, television in that District 1, the second district, from the top of the state, from Oregon, that district, just to run television over in the area that is really heavily populated, is like, I don't know, $500,000 a week. Who's going to raise that kind of money? You know, that, and good grief, what if somebody was out of town that week, they missed all your ads, you just spent $500,000. So when you look at that, it's that's a powerful problem. And, really kind of goes against, you know, so for all the people who voted for it, you might have friends or you might be them, and you're thinking, well, you know, it's to save democracy. Well, we're a representative republic, and I realize there's a democratic element to it. So when we vote, you know, it's a 50 plus one situation on our representation to elect people. But this doesn't further democracy. This actually encourages people to stop participating and tells them that voting doesn't matter because now their vote won't matter. So, not great. He goes on to say what makes its passage especially striking is that Californians overwhelmingly like the Independent Commission. According to a Public Policy Institute of California survey taken last month, 72% of voters say that it has been mostly a good thing that redistricting authority was taken away from the politicians and given to the Citizens Commission back in 2010. That view holds across party lines, across regions, and across demographic groups, even among the very voters who supported Prop 50. In fact, majority of both yes voters, which was 77%, and no voters by 67% agreed that the commission has been a positive reform. Yet Prop 50 didn't just pass, it passed overwhelmingly. So the question is why? The first is execution. So once Governor Gavin Newsom decided to pursue new maps, the Democratic leadership across California aligned instantly. Legislative obstacles were swept aside because they have a two-thirds majority and can make their own rules. Legal challenges were dismissed out of hand by the Democratic stacked state Supreme Court. Yeah, say that fast. Public and private employee unions, as well as significant businesses that either get subsidies from or are regulated by the government. They wrote massive seven-figure checks very quickly. The nearly $300 million cost of staging a special election, that's what it cost all of the counties in the state, all the 58 counties. That was treated as incidental. They kept saying it was a nominal cost. When one party controls every institutional lever and uses it, there appears to be no safeguard capable of slowing or stopping such an effort. So then the second and arguably decisive factor was message framing. And I think we all saw that regardless of which team you were on. Prop 50 was not sold to voters as a technical change to the redistricting process. It was sold as a symbolic blow against Donald Trump. That framing transformed a complex procedural question into a simple yet powerful statement. The mechanics are abstract. Dislike of Donald Trump is visceral. In a state where opposition to Trump has become a political identity, that alone was enough to anchor support. The more the campaign tied the measure to national politics, the less the specifics mattered. Emotion outperformed process, and it almost always does. So I think we all saw that. This had nothing to do with Donald Trump, but people were willing to set aside how it would work, sometimes set aside their own interest. I mean, I have people who are farmers in Northern California who will be hurt by this process and by the representation they will now be getting. And they were willing to do that because it was so vital that we sent a message to Donald Trump. Ridiculous and kind of crazy, but that is where we are these days. So let's see, Alex, we still have to take a break. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can do that if you want. And
all right.
Kurt, please call.
Kurt lives in Santa Rosa. I'm going to blame Santa Rosa for this. Has anything happened in Santa Rosa? Where has he gone? So if you want to find other shows that were actually really well done that have good content, you can go to We the People Radio. .us and listen free of charge.
All right, here we go, guys. No whining this time. And one, two.
Whew. Man, it's hot in here.
Seriously, dude.
There's a crisis on the planet. It's heated up almost a whole degree. It hasn't been this hot in a long time, not since the 16th century, when there were no evil SUVs. Stop global whining, it's up to you. The Earth's been heating up and cooling back down since the day it started spinning round and round. Stop global. out of the clouds.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Yeah, I figured I'd play that because we're kind of in a ring of fire right now.
I told Alex, I go, oh, it's a good thing I'm Irish. We've been chit-chatting about things randomly for centuries. I'm pretty sure that's how we outwitted all of our enemies and stayed safe. We actually either made fun of them, which is tough because I've got nobody to make fun of today. It's very brutal. So we either made fun of them or we talked them to death. Well, there was a lot of drinking, too. There was that.
Yeah, that helps.
There was a tremendous amount of drinking. And I think they were pretty savvy warriors. History, I think, will bear that out. All right. So let's scurry back to Prop 50, because I do want to finish this. It is worth noting how this happened, because, well, I, like, bite my tongue, but, you know, this kind of thing will happen again. It's not the first time. Not the first time we've made bad choices here, and not the first time other states have made bad choices. So another point here, the funding imbalance reinforced the advantage. The Yes campaign raised over $170 million. So it isn't to say that people didn't donate to the No on Prop 50 campaign. It just didn't, and it wasn't that people didn't try. I would never throw anybody in this effort from top to bottom under the bus. I mean, we had people in Northern California counties who printed trifold brochures and walked them to, I think it was like 3,000 doors they walked in Siskiyou County. People became very, very involved in this. So it wasn't one of those things where everybody just decided they were going to sit down and try to slide uphill and get away without doing anything. So the opposition fundraising never reached the scale required to counter the level of saturation. The Yes side outraised the No side by a crushing 2-to-1 ratio, a difference made more pronounced because almost all of the No on 50 funds were spent very early, much of it before the ballots were mailed out. A decision was clearly made back in Washington that the amount of additional campaign funding necessary to try to defeat Prop 50, as much as another $75 to $100 million, was not going to work. With finite national resources, they decided, which is reasonable, that their campaign funds would be better used in dozens of competitive House seats elsewhere in the country, many of which were already held by embattled Republican incumbents. Once that strategic call was made, the Yes side had the airwaves largely to itself during the critical voting period when ballots were already in voters' hands. And I'll tell you, I ran into people all the way up until November 4th who were like, well, what is this anyway? For heaven's sakes, everybody got a mail-out ballot. I think most of us disagree with that process, but it still is the process for this point in time. And when people got them, they either didn't look at them, saw that it was one thing, didn't know what it meant, threw them out, decided to wait, find out about it later, and then, boop, clock ticked. Third factor was the official ballot title and summary, which, of course, we always knew was going to be bad, written by Attorney General Rob Bonta. The voter guide described Prop 50 as requiring congressional districts to be drawn, quote, in the same manner, unquote, as state legislative districts by the Citizens Commission, language that suggested continuity and procedural fairness. Meanwhile, that was only a suggestion. For many voters skimming the voter guide, Prop 50 appeared to protect the commission's process rather than override it. Combine that framing with a lack of consistent opposition presence during the final weeks of the voting, and it became clear how many independents and even Republicans likely voted yes because they believed they were defending the very system the measure was intended to replace. California just demonstrated that reform can be popular, respected, and working, and still be erased the moment it becomes inconvenient to those in power. The independent commission didn't fail, it was crushed. And now that the Democrats who rule the state have learned that they can steamroll any safeguard with money, messaging, and muscle, this won't be the last guardrail to fail. So I thought that he laid that out really well. John Fleischman is a Republican political consultant who's successfully passed a dozen ballot measures nationwide, and he writes at sodoesitmatter.com, and I do have that posted on ShastaGOP.com if you'd like to go look, and I encourage you to look at the maps. It's worth it. Especially if you do live in California, you'll be affected by this. And, you know, if you think that they're just going to come back to it later and, you know, they're just going to go back to the way it was supposed to be and all that, highly unlikely. Just highly unlikely. I don't know. Call me negative, but I don't know. I have my doubts.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
My name is Aaron Ryan, and the indomitable Bill Cundiff is out sick today. He has been overtaken by shingles. So I will spare you my my shingles thing, but you should really look into whether or not if you've had chicken pox and you were like me, mistrustful and suspicious of things like vaccine that they always want you to have. I'm like, just the fact that they want me to have it tells me I don't want to have it most of the time. Yeah, I had to kind of rethink that one on this after watching Bill down the drain for 3+ weeks. So we hope to have him back soon among the living. So let's see. There's something going on in the engineering room. Something's going on with thumbs up that requires
Kurt
thumbs up.
Kurt is on the phone.
Get out. Climate change has returned. My goodness.
It's back with a vengeance.
We were going to have to stalk you, and, we just played Ring of Fire, so you kind of know what we were thinking.
Well, our church service went long. I don't know why.
that's where you tell God you got to go.
Yeah, I didn't have my phone on, like, loud, so it just went to silent. I always put on silent at church. Anyway,
right.
I'm back.
Right, and then you saw, who is this Aaron Ryan person who keeps calling me repetitively? I'm going to need to file some sort of a restraining order.
That's right.
And then you were like, hey, wait a second, I remember her. Holy crap, what time is it? So, all right, I've been reiterating on the Prop 50 sadness and madness in that order, and just finished. We were getting ready to move on to something else, so glad you...
Interestingly enough, you know, it's kind of like, I like it when Trump plays chicken and they don't know how to play chicken.
Yeah.
They don't even know they're playing chicken. You know, he throws it out there, and then they react, almost like a conditioned response.
Yeah, I think Pavlov probably, you know...
It's pretty funny. Anyway.
Yeah, he set that up. I already gave your bio at the very beginning. So all we know about you is you were a teacher and... Oops, sorry about that. Turn my phone... Now I can turn my phone off because now you're not going to call me anymore.
Right.
You have a background in geology and teaching sciences, and you have a unique perspective on man-made climate change, global warming, and that debate that never happens because we never get a seat at the table.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that I like to emphasize, especially when talking to people who don't know much about the topic, but they hear a lot about it. For example, you're talking to your average Joe on the street, and you ask them the random question, you know, how much carbon dioxide is in the atmosphere, and they say, a lot. I say, well, how much percentage? Like, for example, 21% oxygen. And they say, okay, they'll maybe say so. I've seen as high as 60%, and I've seen as low as, like, 5%. rarely, to the point where it's like, it surprised me when they say, oh, yeah, 0.038% or 400 parts per million, which is trace.
Yeah.
That reduces down to one molecule of carbon dioxide for every, get this, for every 2,500 parts of atmosphere. So 400 parts per million
right.
is one molecule for every 2,500. So you have a 2,500 dollar bills floating around. One of those dollar bills is carbon dioxide. And of that little carbon dioxide dollar bill, we contribute 4 pennies to it, 4 cents. So that 4 cents, that 4% of the world's carbon dioxide that we're actually contributing to, and that's actually being generous, it's absurd. It's absurdity upon absurdity. It's thermodynamic nonsense. Secondly, carbon dioxide is a gas. It's a natural occurring gas. It's an important gas. It's a gas of life. All plants need it to live. And photosynthesis has to be what keeps our planet alive. Without photosynthesis, there's no more life. They're producers. So we need plants to live. The healthier the plants, the healthier the planet, the healthier the life is on this planet, let's say. So carbon dioxide has been as high as 2,500 parts per million and as low, and we're at the lower scheme now. We're at 400 parts per million. We've had it like 350 to 325, you know, based on Volstock ice core samples. For example, that would be ice cores that formed in Volstock, Antarctica, kind of given the basic reading of how much oxygen and nitrogen and so forth is in the atmosphere at the time. Carbon dioxide being most of the time trace and giving readings as high as 2,500 parts, that's a lot. That's great. That would be like if you're in a greenhouse in Switzerland, for example. In Switzerland, they're very smart people. They're very productive people. I was there, and I asked about these greenhouses, and they said, yeah, we pump in carbon dioxide in there to get a bigger crop faster with less water, because when you have more carbon dioxide, you become more drought-resistant because you don't have to have your stomata open so long that you lose water through transpiration. So anyway, getting back to carbon dioxide, it's a great gas. It's trace. We contribute very little. But carbon dioxide, people don't know this either, it only holds heat while the sun is on it. So if the sun is out, it's hitting carbon dioxide, well, it will create a little heat. It'll hold it for a little while. Once the sun goes down, there's the problem. The problem is it doesn't hold heat unless the sun is actually beating on it. Now, interestingly enough, if you go to Hawaii, where I used to hang out a lot, I would sleep outside under the stars, you know, look at the palm trees if it wasn't raining and so forth, go outside. I would sleep without a blanket. It was so warm there because water vapor happens to be the world's number one and most effective greenhouse gas because it holds heat all night. How's that one? So
yeah.
It might get a little cooler at night, but not as much because water vapor holds heat all night. So as soon as you, say for example, a solar eclipse goes over Colorado like it did in 2017. Standing outside, it was 80 degrees. This is a report from a friend of mine that was there. 80 degrees, t-shirt weather, solar eclipse goes over in 2017. He said it went from 80 to 65 in seconds. He said within 10 seconds, he's telling his wife, wow, feel that cold. We got shivers. We were thinking about getting jackets on, and so my wife went and got and so forth, right? So he told me this whole story. I said, yeah, because water vapor only holds heat while the sun is on it. You block it with a planet, or a moon, let's say, and now we've got 5 minutes max of cold. And then it goes past and it starts warming up again. So the point is this. Carbon dioxide, yay, is a greenhouse gas, but it is very ineffective at doing what greenhouse gases do, holding heat. So it's not even a player. It's trace. We contribute very little of it, and it doesn't even do anything with regards to the greenhouse gas effect of holding heat and moving it. That's what greenhouse gas, like water vapor, holds heat and moves it around. It's thermodynamics. So it is utterly thermodynamic absurdity to believe that carbon dioxide actually is an effective gas that runs the climate. Water vapor, number one greenhouse gas. 95% of the world's greenhouse gas is water vapor. The other would be other gases like carbon dioxide and methane, which, by the way, is 2 parts per million. That's two little molecules. for every million molecules of our atmosphere. It is thermodynamic absurdity. If you say that cow farts are causing climate change, you need to have your whatever degree you have revoked immediately for utter and complete absurd incompetence in the knowledge of the science that you're supposedly being an expert
in. No pun intended on the whole utter thing.
Yes. So anyway, there's a little rendition about carbon dioxide and its importance for life. The more of it, the better. It is a greenhouse gas, but doesn't act like a greenhouse gas in the sense that it actually holds heat and does anything important with the weather.
Uh-huh.
Water vapor being the number one greenhouse gas. For example, we've had various epochs. We've had the Great Ice Age. We had the Mini Ice Age 1, and then the second Mini Ice Age 2. And then we had the Little Ice Age. We just came out of, it started warming up after 1850. So Greenland was green at one time during the Roman warming period. England grew grapes during the Roman warming period as far north as Scotland. That's climate change. Was it caused by cow farts or human activity? No. Natural cycles. Volcanism, blocking the sun, cooling the earth. Those are the things that really affect things. The sun and its relationship with the water vapor and the atmosphere. The sun is primary, obviously. So when you block the sun with lots of like ash in the atmosphere from volcanoes, sulfur dioxide, etc., there was actually a year, I believe it was 1815, that they said there was a year without a summer. It was so bad, there was no summer for at least 1 year, a little bit into two. What happened? One little volcano popped. It's called Mount Tambora in Indonesia, right near the equator. Blanketed the earth with volcanic ash, blocking the sun. No growing periods. People were dying. Famine was increasing. Pestilence was everywhere. It was one of the worst times ever. Have your audience looked up the year without a summer, Mount Tambora, and they'll see just one little volcano did that. And it was right near the equator, which was really significant for that reason. So when you look at geology, geology ties in very much so to the climate. For example, you know, you have the Cascade Range, Mount St. Helens, May 18th, 1980. It blew its top. That's what got me into geology, by the way, Mount St. Helens. I was fascinated with volcanism and tectonics and so forth, and so that's where I went into geology. And that was the major thing that happened in my lifetime that really got me stimulated in that direction.
That was huge, huge, huge impact. Kurt, we have to take a really quick break, then we're going to come back.
Alrighty.
Our guest is Kurt Schrenker, and you are listening to We the People with just Aaron. That's it. No Bill. Bill's homesick. So that's why he's not saying anything. I do not have him, I do not have tape over his mouth. I haven't done anything to him. He's fine. Well, he's sick, but he's fine. You can find everything about the program, including the archives, how to sponsor, all those kinds of good things, at wethepeopleradio.us. Yes, we do have a wealth of music available for shows on this sort of topic. Blinded Me with Science. What's that from? Like the '70s, maybe? 80s?
83, I think.
Probably.
Oh. Yeah, still good today. So, all right, Mount St. Helens happens, and you already sort of liked that topic.
Well, yeah. What what happened was all this ash, as if you remember, it made it south. It made it all the way around the Earth, actually, made it to Maine, and less than 3 days, and of course it darkened everything underneath it. So people were really seeing the sun being blocked. There were streetlights going on 24 hours a day underneath the cloud of ash that was blocking. And of course it got cold too. But the thing was, when you have multiple volcanoes, Lassen, Shasta, you know, St. Helens, Rainier, Baker, you know, all these different ones in the Cascade Range and so forth, all going crazy, now we've got a blanket of ash. So when volcanism was heavy in the past, and it has been at times, we can know that. We even Lassen is a very active volcano to this day. I'd love to, you know, study that one. I've actually studied quite a bit of Lassen, actually, over the years, because it does reflect a lot like what we see at St. Helens. Mount St. Helena here in Santa Rosa, California, where I'm from, St. Helena was a volcano that was twice as tall, lost 3,000 feet of summit elevation in just a series of a few eruptions about 3,500 years ago, making this whole area basically covered with rock, volcanic debris field that now we're living on top of, and that's why Sonoma County has such great wines. We got the great weather and the great soils, as it were, to give a good wine grape, for example.
Mm.
But anyway, I digress there a tad, but I had a plug-in for Santa Rosa and the wine country. The thing that I was really extremely into at one time was glaciation. I still am. Glaciation. We have Meteora in Greece. We have, of course, glaciers all around the world. But Yosemite Valley was glaciated during the Great Ice Age, and those little areas, that was almost 2 miles of ice in Yosemite Valley. That's
wow.
A lot of ice.
That's
and
a lot
across
of ice.
The fluted plain, you know, all the way across, you know, you got down to Kentucky, into that area, all the way down from Michigan and all those areas, all that was ice during the Great Ice Age. We're seeing with the Great Lakes and all the different scratch zones and scrapings and everything else, we see that, what they call moraines and so forth, remnants of ices or ice age ice that formed these glaciers. So we have times where we have cold and we have warm. We have warming periods and cooling periods. And we have those that recorded in history, the Roman warming period, the medieval warming period, the Renaissance came. It was times were better historically under warming periods and cooling periods. When you had the Great Ice Age, we had people living in caves. We call them Neanderthals. They were human beings living in caves. They believed in life after death. They buried their dead. They did cave paintings. But life was hard. You couldn't grow anything. You had all your food came from meat. You know,
yeah.
If you found, you know, vegetables, it was a luck job there. You know, you didn't have farming. It was just wasn't happening all that much. Soon after that, that was a Great Ice Age. After that, we had a warming period. And a cooling period, a warming period and a cooling period. And we're just coming out of the last ice age. It's called the Little Ice Age. Through the 1700s, it started warming up after 1850, they say. That's kind of the target date. You know, it's hard to fix it, you know. But the point is that we're on a warming trend. So now we're looking at this little itty-bitty time and saying it's all caused by cars. Wait a minute, what's the car problem? Oh, yeah, carbon dioxide.
Yeah, right.
Carbon dioxide. Oh, yeah, that's good for plants. Give me some data. Give me data points. Give me the proof. No, we're just going to give you assumptions and what we think. We don't even have to give you data points. There hasn't been any real papers, anything really substantial to give human-caused climate change even a leg to stand on any scientific level. But they say, 93% of climate scientists agree. Hogwash. I read the paper. There's a guy named Cook out of Australia. He basically said, it's been like years since I read it, but I'll give you the gist of it. He was saying that what they did is they took about 12,000 articles in a span of 10 years. They didn't read the articles. They just looked at the abstracts. The abstracts give you the kind of the summary of the paper on climate change and ice age, anything to do with warming up the earth. Okay. Any papers?
Sure.
97% of them, they say, Obama quote, he just tweeted it one day, 97% of climate scientists agree man-made global warming is real. Boom. And now the whole world bought into it, hook, line, and sinker, because it was unquestioned assumptions that Obama would give us the truth. Well, when you actually read the article, it said nothing of the sort. It was 97% of the third that have 97% of the, of, because it was basically broken down in thirds. The papers are broken down, and they say basically a third of them say yes, a third of them say no, and a third of them don't know. So of the ones that say climate change, 97% say it's human caused.
97% say they don't even know.
The data, and they're ignoring papers that didn't fit the paradigm. So we get guys like Mann, the hockey stick.
Yeah.
We get him to do a paper, and it says, look at that. We have stasis and then a sharp rise in temperature. Hogwash again. He was shown to be a fraud. He ignored data, major data points that show we have a mini ice age and a little ice age that would have been in that graph, but he took them all out because he wanted to see stasis. So he used what they call data that they got from a different direction. They didn't use the same data points like historical. They used tree rings to get the data. That's really reliable. And then so he was able to get the data he wanted to create the graph he wanted to create, the extreme stasis with a sharp rise during the Industrial Revolution. Ah, see, it's all tied up, it's all correlated to climate change here with humans and their Industrial Revolution. So industry bad.
Right.
Stop eating meat because, you know, flatulence when cows are causing climate change with the two molecules per million. Okay, that's another absurdity. They say we've got to do something about these cars. We've got to make them this way, and so they're trying to make them cheaper. They're trying to make them lighter. They're trying to make them economical, and they're trying to do all these things. They're pushing electrical now, of course, with Teslas and different other cars. They're trying to manipulate us, and you know, for example, this is something crazy. And you can check this out on your own, but the Biden administration did the Green New Deal, basically. It was actually the Green New Deal, just repackaged. They allotted, during Biden time, $8 billion to build chargers, car chargers, for your average car. Not your Tesla chargers, because they're everywhere, but car chargers in various malls and places. $8 billion was allotted. In the 4 years, they built eight chargers. Eight. That's $1 billion per charger. I wonder where the rest of the money went.
Michigan?
You have to ask the question. You can't spend $8 billion. I mean, I'd love to spend $1 billion on something. I would have the most amazing house ever, right?
Yeah, if you could even spend it. I mean, could you imagine?
Yeah. But, these people were putting money in people's pockets everywhere to where they could.
But there never was a repercussion particularly for that because we just have never, I always use the term we loosely, have never been able to get around the corner of this not being a man-made problem and all of that. I mean, it just, can you talk at all about kind of the motivation behind a lot of this? I mean, is that in your wheelhouse?
It's all over the wheelhouse.
Okay.
You know, the science, obviously, I can rock solid rest on the science.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
you have a,
let's
have
keep
a
doing the science.
Problem, yeah. Therefore you have a human solution. The human solution is basically socialism. Okay? That's where it's basically going to head.
Yeah, and that's what they're...
They never let a crisis go to waste. We got to create a crisis.
And that way
and
we
that's
can...
And the easy one to blame it on us because, you know, we can have the hockey stick tell us, and Obama told us, and there you go. Well, non-scientists giving us science.
But, Kurt, didn't we have... Wasn't it global cooling in the 70s? I seem to remember
Absolutely.
That as a kid. We were all going to freeze to death, right?
Exactly.
And then...
The thing is, we have short memories, and we're really not too bright. We make decisions on assumptions and on emotion, and people are geared that way now. They just trust the science. It's like, wait a second, trust the science. What'd they tell us about COVID? Oh, trust the science. Give
yeah,
me a break.
Yeah, that blew up. Yeah, and what science? Because in what class did we ever, I mean, even if all you did was go through high school, you know, science was never, someone said something and then it was that way forever. That's it.
Well,
I mean, what happened to the whole hypothesis and, you know, all those good things?
Questioning science is science.
That's how you... Yeah, that's how we invented things. That's how we solved problems. That's how we figured out the Earth wasn't flat. I mean, really, the whole time. Any idea? I mean, really, what's your thought on why these guys did? Were they just super well connected?
What do you mean?
I mean, you know, these guys that somehow they make some crazy assertion and then. I guess we'll have to do it on the back side of the news, but I'm curious how they became so powerful.
Yeah, okay. No worries.
We're chatting about climate change. Now, we've gone from Prop 50 to climate change like we were supposed to. Yay! And I have a fun song for you about glaciers. It's painful to listen to, but funny nonetheless. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I look at you now, see a temperature rising, while mighty glaciers weep. I look at you now, see your oceans arising, while nations are lost in the deep. I don't know why nobody told you they stole and fooled you.
Now here we have two real pioneers embarking upon a new career, capitalizing on this global warming hype. Yeah, they're the ones that brought you the left-handed hammer and tried to market a recycled pamper. You could say the Gullible brothers have always been the entrepreneurial type. But this next harebrained Gullible venture could be earmarked as the major clincher as to whether or not they'll be living it up in their retirement age. They put all they had into one bankroll, bought a bunch of land down at the South Pole, eagerly awaiting the impending doom of climate change, thereby being in the catbird seat in the new Florida. And I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean, but man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms.
A lot of us know that this is a, you know, really basically kind of a just a hoax. I mean, they've skewed enough data. There's enough stuff, you know, the $8 billion for 8 car chargers. There's been so much stuff. Because it turned into a massive policy thing almost, I don't know, it feels like almost immediately, but you've tracked it better than I have. How long did it take before it became a moral imperative, therefore a policy imperative?
Well, you know, what I always like to tell people is that, first of all, I believe in climate change more than anybody you know. You know, I am a climate change believer. I believe in climate change more than Al Gore and Bill Nye put together. Okay, together. Those two are deniers compared to me. But I will always say on the offset of that, but I know the humans aren't causing it. See, they have to have humans causing it so that we can have a human or a political intervention to fix the problem. You know, never let a crisis go to waste.
Yeah.
We got to create a big enough crisis. Not just for America. How about the world? How about world-ending famine, global warming? Well, that's actually a good thing. But hey, let's not embrace the ice age yet. You know, that'll really bring problems if it really happens. And it could be another ice age because it's all based on volcanism. And you don't really have too much say when a volcano is going to go. You just find out and you get out of the way if you can. All right? That's all you can do.
Yeah, we don't get to stop that yet.
Yeah.
Like,
so human-caused, i.e. your cars you're driving, emitting of just a trace amount of carbon dioxide compared to the oceans that emit carbon dioxide when they degas half the Earth's surface, basically, over half. It's pretty much, well, if you look at the side of the Earth, when you look at the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you pretty much just see ocean. And as that ocean warms, it degasses. The warmer the oceans get, the more they degas. And then what happens is, the gas gets up there and it blocks, the clouds block the sun, and then it starts cooling. It kind of oscillates. They actually do, they actually call it the oscillation effect, is the word that they actually use and refer to that.
Okay.
But this has always changed. The actual fact of the matter is climate is always changing. It always will change. There's nothing we can do to stop it. Now, you can say, well, we can do modification, i.e., you know, geoengineering. We can seed clouds and get lots of rain like they did in Vegas, like they did in Dubai a couple years ago. Where they had flooding in the streets. Say, oh, we did a little too much. You know, yeah, we can do stuff like that, but we're not going to have, global warming on a scale of any sort because of humans. You're going to have isolated things like cloud seeding and other sort of things using HARP, H-A-R-P. Certain things like that, and those things are actually trying to, you know, even bring about change. They say, blame it on the Earth or blame it on you. And once they blame you, now they can control you. It's your fault. Now we got to do something about emissions. All of us drive cars. Let's get a hold of people. Now we get a hold of an economy. Now we get a hold of the very thing that keeps the economy going, transportation, fuel, energy. Once we control energy, then we got everyone by a death grip around their neck. It's like the word mortgage doesn't mean like I owe money to the bank. No, death, it means literally the word mortgage is death grip. They're putting you on an economic death grip, saying we can control where you live, how far you're able to drive. You're going to need carbon credits. Oh, wait a minute, we're going to have to do this. We're going to build these big, huge factories here that all they do is suck air and pull out carbon dioxide, spending billions of dollars across the nation. All these places are putting out these factories that actually suck air, and they contain and trap carbon dioxide. It is the most insane ideas possible. Imagine this. Imagine some genius, some amazing Nobel Prize winning, you know, physicists from Harvard and a team of guys from the Ivy League to say, we've discovered a way to take about 60% of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. Fantastic, right? Great thing. We have less, you know, global warming now, right? No, we have the death of life. Life is gone. Everything dies. The net effect is no more plants, no more life. Plants have to be at the minimum 150 parts per million to even stay alive, not thrive. The more of it they have, the more they thrive. And then at that point, at 150, they start to die. So the net result of losing all that great carbon dioxide is the death of all things. What pollutant out there in the world, which EPA has actually identified, and they take charge of the term carbon dioxide, say it is now classified as a pollutant.
Yeah.
The very thing that keeps us alive is a pollutant. You imagine if you get rid of this pollutant and everything dies. Some pollutant, right? No, we want more of it. As a matter of fact, the founder of Greenpeace, Patrick Moore, if you look that up, Patrick Moore is the founder of Greenpeace, and he's been on a tirade saying we need more carbon dioxide. We are carbon poor, not carbon rich in our atmosphere. We're at the level of low end, not high end. The higher the end, like during the Roman warming period, there was more carbon dioxide because oceans were warming and degassing more carbon dioxide. Life thrived. Right now, they've actually say that the Earth is greening because we're coming out of that ice age. and it's getting more green as we're getting more carbon dioxide. As oceans degas, and our little trace 4% of contribution is only doing one thing, giving plants a little more edge, just a little bit. We need lots more.
Well, also,
the carbon dioxide is the enemy, but it's not. It's our friend, but they want to classify it as an enemy, control it, therefore controlling us. Now, why? It's economic imprisonment. They keep you on that treadmill. You go to work, you wake up, you do your bits, you do this, you pay your taxes, then you die. Boom. Recycle. Recycle people. Just keep them in this little thing, this little loop, while we, the elite, will always stay above them. And that's only accomplished through socialism. So they actually ultimately want a one-world government. That's why it's a global problem. They want a global currency. They want a global leader. They want to have basically a socialist, communist worldview controlling us. And then the elite, let's say, the proletariat, will be the ones in charge.
Yeah, for our own good, of course. And before we leave, Dr. Patrick Moore, we interviewed him back in 2019, April of 2019, and if people would like to listen to some of that, totally worth doing. It's commercial-free, uninterrupted, free to listen, and if you just go to Enviro Craziness on the website at We the People Radio.
I already know his direction. That's great. That'd be a great one.
Yeah, we have him on there. And he, the thing that was... Well, two things that were super interesting that really stuck out to me at the time was why he left Greenpeace, because I was fascinated on that. You know, like, why did you leave? You started this thing, you know, what made you leave? And the other thing was the deal with the reefs, the bleaching of the
yeah.
coral reefs. And he actually kind of yelled at us on that part. He did yell at us. I didn't have a chance to maybe put a disclaimer up that we didn't actually believe that. We were just asking him about it.
He
yelled at us about the coral reefs. But I got to tell you, do you know why he left? You know why he ditched out on Greenpeace?
What is that?
It was awesome. He said, well, we saved the whales. You know, we formed to save the whales. And, you know, I was the only real scientist. And you know, it was a good project. It was well thought out, and it was necessary at the time. We did a good job. We did a lot of good work for the whales. And he said, then they came to me, and the next thing they wanted to do was ban chlorine. And he's like, wait, what? And they said, well, we have to ban chlorine. Like, that's our next campaign, like banning chlorine. And I mean, even I knew chlorine's on the periodic table. I mean, chlorine's an element in our world. You can't ban something that's naturally occurring. And they thought, when he, you know, kind of went at him with that, they thought it came from a factory. They thought we made chlorine. And so he was like... He actually said it in the interview. He goes, yeah, I realized I was working with people who were intellectually at such a deficit that I wasn't able to get anything done, and I left. And then they told everybody that he was never part of it.
Well, you know, fake science survives on suppressing people's ability to get knowledge about it, in other words, censorship,
yeah,
and on keeping people ignorant. So ignorance and censorship are the bread and butter now of science. You don't question. No, wait, we always question. We always look at the data. What do you think peer review is?
Yeah,
that's
right.
Called questioning, people.
Right.
Stop the lunacy.
Yeah, yeah, step away from the... So with the reefs, that was really interesting.
Well, hit that again because it's been a lot of years
since we've talked about that. Please do.
Yeah, all right. Well, the Great Barrier Reef is the world's most amazing reef. I used to live in Australia. I know quite a few Australians, and love the people there. There was a time during the Great Ice Age when the Aborigines say, this is how far we walked. And it was right in the middle of the Great Barrier Reef. It was dry land during the Great Ice Age. Remember, most or a lot of water from the oceans were heaped up on land. Siberia, North America, you know, all the way down to Kentucky, ice sheets, all the way across the Fruited Plain. And that's how we get, you know, the glaciation and all the different cuts and, you know, the tectonic stuff that goes along with that too. And the volcanism that stimulated that from blocking the sun. Now, you see how it all ties in?
Yeah.
You know, you have the science of glaciation, climate change caused by volcanoes primarily, blocking the sun, affecting the climate of the earth, getting in a cold spell. Then you have to kind of come back and warm things up. So you go through these oscillations, and the Great Barrier Reef, again, was dry. Then after the Great Ice Age, a lot of water basically made it back in the oceans. We have land bridges. Now, Australia's landlocked. It was actually land bridges into Australia, too. Landlocked, the Great Barrier Reef is now ocean, and it's shallow enough to have a perfect depth for reefs, because a reef has to be at a certain depth. You can't have it above the water, and you can't have it too deep either, because you have to get sunlight down there. After 60 feet, 70 feet, you don't see much light. You see some. I mean, I was a scuba diver for years, still do. And, you know, the deeper you go, you have to get in these big, bright lights to be able to see color. And the colors are amazing, but you can't see the color at all unless you have a light on it, by the way.
Yeah, and he talked about how it's organisms that live in the coral. The coral is white. It's white.
Yeah, they're little homes.
And it's the, what is it?
It's calcium-based, but I was going to get to this guy named Peter Ridd.
Okay.
I'll repeat that name again. Peter Ridd. He is the world authority on the Great Barrier Reef.
Oh.
And he has been criticized and ridiculed for not carrying and not stating the, you know, repeating the narrative. He says the Great Barrier Reef is healthy. It goes through cycles. It goes through these cycles of bleaching. It's just a natural occurrence. Oh, no, it's caused by humans. Wait, stop.
Oops.
And he has been, like, ostracized, thrown out of every, you know, science group because he won't toe the line.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. Isn't he the world authority on the Great Barrier Reef? Yes. So shouldn't we talk to him about some of these things, the historical aspects and the scientific salinity and everything else? Yes. But wait, he doesn't give us the narrative we want. Get rid of him.
Off with his head. How do you spell his last name? R-I-D? Is it
R-I-D-D. Peter Ridd.
Okay.
Yeah, you can look that up on your little show there and maybe put online there. But he's been interviewed by a guy named Tom Nelson. I'll throw another name out there. Tom Nelson Podcast.
Okay.
If you are a junkie for this kind of information, he has interviewed some of the top people in the world. He's Harper, Lindzen, a gal, her name is, let me think for a second, I have to look it up. Anyway, she was in charge of Georgia Tech. She was the chairwoman in charge of Georgia Tech. She was fired because she wouldn't toe the line. She was a climate scientist, a real one, not just some guy like, you know, sideliner says, I just repeat what I'm told.
Sure.
You know, she actually was doing the science. Another lady, Corinne, let me go look these up real quick.
We've chatted with Dr. Judith Curry, too, a few times.
Curry, that's her name, Judith Curry. You're on it.
And she's great. We've had her on a bunch of times. We have to take a really quick break. You can, if you want to reference those folks, you have a couple of minutes to do it.
Yeah.
And I'll adjust my microphone so I stop hitting it. And sorry for blowing your eardrums out there.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. So,
Judith Curry is top-of-the-line scientist, and they said, no more for you.
Yeah. Yeah, she didn't, she wouldn't toe the party line, and even though she was a tremendous scientist, and they thought her work was excellent, well, now she's not excellent.
The problem was she questioned it.
Yeah.
Because she was going along with it for a while, and she says, "Yo, let me look into this a little more closely because it's getting to be kind of a hot topic."
Right.
And she says, "There's nothing further from the truth than what they're saying."
She's like, "Hey, wait a second, this isn't real." Yeah, she had quite a career before they made her. Made her persona non grata.
Right.
And that's fairly common. So when you start seeing that, you know, that's always a little heads up. We'll be right back with our guest. And, are we good? Okay, we are good.
We're good.
And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
And one, two.
Man, it's hot in here.
Seriously, dude.
crisis on the planet. It's heated up almost a whole degree. It hasn't been this hot in a long time, not since the 16th century, when there were no evil SUVs. Stop global warming, it's up to you. The Earth's been heating up and cooling back down since the day it started spinning round and round. Stop global warming, get your head out of the clouds.
Talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days. Even the air, you're running out of rhinos. What do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment. We ain't too.
Running out of anything in my deep freeze. I love that song. I wonder if they got in trouble for that. It's an old one. I wonder if that was before you were, you know, canceled for, you know, going against the orthodoxy. Hey, so did you have other people for us that we should?
I was gonna. You know, you got Susan Crockford using your archives. A guy named Richard Lindzen. He's professor of atmospheric physics at MIT. Of course, he is saying there's no climate emergency. William Happer, he's at Princeton, and he was on the advisory boards, and he's like on the, he does a whole lot of things. He does most of his work on carbon dioxide. That's where I get a lot of my study and research and his tests and so forth. He has this little, like a meter reader thing. He reads the amount of carbon dioxide at any given time. And it varies. You know, if you're in a building for any length of time, carbon dioxide goes in because people are breathing, okay?
Yeah.
They even have these carbon dioxide meters that if it gets a little too high, you can get hypoxia, so they open up and allow fresh air from the outside to recirculate. And so these are some of the things that you see. So he's involved with that sort of stuff. There's Nobel Prize winners. But the one I want to talk about is a gal named Susan Crockford out of Canada. She's a zoologist. Her specialty...
So we all saw this old polar bear standing on this sort of frozen...
Your connection is too far away.
Oh, yeah, let me do this real quick. I'm in my car, so
it made a
quantum leap into the system. I was.
Yeah, your car broke up with you. That's never good.
We don't do well.
All right, now we're back.
There we go.
Back in life. Susan Crockford, Canadian scientist, world authority again on polar bears.
Mm.
And we all saw the old polar bear that some guy took a picture of that was dying. Now, you know, animals die from time to time. Matter of fact, people die every day. About, you know, basically 2.8 million people die in America every year, roughly. Probably a little bit more lately since we had the COVID vaccine. Actually, I'm certain of that.
Yeah.
It was pretty much static within 50,000 either way. And then COVID rolls around 2020, and by the way, it didn't even go up or down. It actually went down slightly from the average, okay? So there was no pandemic, just FYI. It was all media-driven fear and number crunching that was done through manipulation, saying, okay, if you check this box, we'll give you money. The more boxes checked, the more cases we have, the more money we give out, the better numbers we have, and now we can keep the fear going, which is exactly what they're doing with climate change, controlling the narrative.
Yeah, there was a...
The narrative of what? Oh, climate change is killing polar bears. So we see this one polar bear. Guy's out there for ages looking for a real sorry-looking one, some old grandpa, probably a great-grandpa, and he's looking for a place to die. Well, they don't, like, go to the rest home and get hospice. They go off on some iceberg, and they lay there, and they die and become fish food or whatever other food.
Hey, what do you call it? What do you call a dead polar bear?
What do you call a dead polar bear?
Anything you want, he's dead.
Okay, got it, man. We'll call him fish food for now. But anyway, the thing is that this guy took this picture and created this whole narrative that it's because of man-made global warming, the polar bears are dying. And us as emotional creatures who don't think logically will just follow our emotions and believe the narrative. So Crockford actually chimed in and says, actually, no, they're actually thriving more than any other time because we actually have a melting of ice. We have more plant life in the water, which then gives more oxygen, which gives more food for the fish, which then provides more fish, which then provides more seals, which, of course, gives more food for guess who? Our friends, the polar bears. So actually, in reality, they were thriving, but that doesn't set the narrative right. We can't have a thriving ecosystem. We have to have a collapsing ecosystem, which is where Greta Thunberg, you know, a great scientist that everyone should probably read.
As long as we don't have to listen to her.
Well, no, how dare you say that?
Exactly.
You know, the great scientists that we got to listen to are, you know, Al Gore.
Yeah.
I mean, what's he known for? Basically making fear movies that were put in every single public school in the nation. You had to watch it at least twice, maybe three times in your career. Earth in the Balance and, you know, Inconvenient Truth and all these different things, right? You get Leonardo DiCaprio, amazing scientist, spending millions of his own dollars fighting climate change. You get Prince Henry, of course. Well, Prince Harry, I should say. You know, he's out there. Obama, he's fighting there, you know, locking arms to stop the climate change.
He's kind of lost his edge on the climate change, though. You don't hear much from Obama. I would be remiss if I didn't hearken back to, like, 2016. We had a guy named Jim Lee who was on the program back then a few times. And he was specifically going up against this hysterical, what do you call it? Stuff with this geoengineering and all that. You know, we're all being sprayed like lab rats and we're all going to die and the trees in the Costco parking lot are all dead and blah, blah, blah. And the ozone layer is burning us to death. And this guy's like, look, it's all just fear porn. You get them hooked on it and then they can't walk away. And I was like, you know, that's probably the best characterization I've heard for this whole thing. The whole climate thing. It's just
emotion.
Fear porn.
Yeah.
Get them hooked on it, and then they can't walk away. And even when fact, you know, even like we see this, doesn't even have to be climate. We see this like with wolves. Obviously, they're not endangered. We have a lot of them, and more than even the agency, you know, the state agency would admit. And yet, can't even discuss taking them off the endangered species list because once they're on forever, and then they must be, you know, we must have more. Must have more. So I think polar bears hit that same thing. Everybody got sad about the polar bears. And
also, it's Christmas time, and we see polar bears drinking Coke and having a great life.
Oh, there's that. That's true. Forgot
there's
about that.
You know, because now they're endearing to us because, you know, they're the weighing up there, and they're doing their best to live in this cold place. Why live up there? Well, because they actually thrive pretty well when there's seals. They are eating high on the hog, and that's the whole thing. They're thriving. So Susan Crockford, by the way, is one that you can look up, and she lost her job because she didn't tote the narrative, you know, repeat the narrative.
And she said polar bears weren't endangered, and therefore she had to be excommunicated?
Exactly.
Oh.
No, she's gone. She's excommunicated.
Oh. We lost a lot of good people. Just if we were just going to look at this one topic and make a... You know, a list of all the people that are now not contributing to the science. And how does, you know, that's the crazy part is I think if people were really dispassionate about it and looked at it factually, that doesn't advance knowledge at all.
Well, you know, what we're seeing here is the fear porn. I think it's a drug that they're pumping into our schools, these kids. And I've seen kids, and I taught school for years. Kids, I know a lot of kids right now who says, I'm never going to have kids. Why? Oh, because overpopulation, we're going to kill ourselves. Is this another gas, another carbon dioxide producer? We got to do something about this, you know? So they're anti-children, they're anti-family, they're pretty much saying, you know, just live for now because tomorrow we die. Almost like Epicureanism. But, you know, you got these kids living in fear, though, knowing that this world's going to end soon, and it's all because of our poison that we're putting into the atmosphere, carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
I oftentimes run into people that will also equate carbon dioxide with, you know, basically poison gas or garbage. They say, oh, wait, we got all these chemicals. We got all this, you know, overflowing whatever from our landfills. You know, we have microplastics and this and that. It's like different animal. Let's keep them separate. Carbon dioxide doesn't drive climate, but you're asserting that it does. Show me the study that actually shows it actually drives climate. It doesn't. There's no study because there's no actual factual evidence that even supports such a notion, but it doesn't matter because we got people to believe it without question. That fear drives them to doing stupid things. Getting a jab.
Oh, getting a job?
No, jab. Getting the COVID.
Oh, jab. Yeah.
People got that out of fear.
Yeah.
Or if they don't get it, they're going to give someone else the COVID. So you better do it if you love your grandmother.
Right. They did a really good. I'll have to find it and I'll put it on the page for today. But there was an amazing about 20-minute video called "The Killing of the Mind." How mass psychosis takes over an entire population, and
that was awesome. Yeah, must be a great study.
It was on YouTube. It is on YouTube. It's like the second most looked at thing that I ever referenced because it came out in 2021. It was during the whole COVID thing when people really truly had lost their minds. I mean, they had lost their ability to reason. How about that? To be more accurate.
People, mass formation psychosis, you no longer think.
And that's what this is. Mass psychosis, how an entire population becomes mentally ill. And it was done by the Academy of Ideas, and it's one of those that is, they draw on like a cartoon board.
Exactly. I saw that one.
It's really good. I'll put it on there because it's still incredibly appropriate today. And I really liked it because the answer to that was by making fun of the people who were pushing the narrative. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
Well, now you're in my wheelhouse. So we save ourselves from that by mocking them. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Huh, that's fantastic.
I'll have to send you a few things later on.
Yes,
on
please.
The text.
I will add those because on an honest conversation with most people, they'll say, yeah, you know, I kind of bought into that for a while, but it seems like that's not really a thing. However, we are ensnared by the policy now that has us by the throat, you know, so now can't rebuild your house for the same price you used to, not just the cost of materials, but all of the policy that goes with it, and all of the climate change stuff. So it turned out to be a big moneymaker, honestly, for a lot of folks.
That's why I refer to the climate change controversy not as a hoax as much as a scam.
Yeah.
It's a foundation for the scam that they're putting onto the American people and onto the world with the movement of money. Who controls the purse strings? Oh, we got to set these car charges up. Okay, we're going to get those going. Okay, so there's $8 billion we'll allocate. Good. Let's see if that can get done. You know, 3 years later, they got 8 stations going right now. That's it. 8.
Yeah.
That's insanity.
Yeah, and that makes no sense. Well, and look at just even the things that have to be included in an automobile because of the climate change stuff.
Yeah.
Tell me this: are you seeing that fade out of? I don't know if we can necessarily quantify it on a policy level, but do you see people kind of stepping away from that, or are they digging in?
I see people that the average person, it's not the top of mind thing. You know, kids, I think they keep it in the schools. It's kind of in top of mind for them. But they don't know why. They just are kept in fear. But
yeah.
I think your average person that I talk to, because I talk to people every day, you know, and I find a lot of them, it's not their main concern. It's kind of like they're realizing it. And And, you know, I've talked to thousands of people about climate change, you know, in lecture form, in radio form, and one-on-one and in groups, small groups. And it's a kind of an ongoing study. And I'm convinced that the whole climate change scam survives on they depend on your ignorance of the issues and of the science itself. Once
sure.
they can keep you in the dark and feed you, I call it the mushroom diet.
I was just going to say, it's the mushroom diet.
They keep you in the dark and they feed you lots of manure.
Yeah. Well, and if you, depending on the circles you travel in, if you pipe up against it, then, you know, you're a heretic and it's still the same. We still treat heretics the same, you know. They are, they're not fit for polite society. So I would imagine in a lot of circles, in a lot of geographic areas too, I would imagine in your area, climate change alarmism is alive and well.
It is. I've gone to some, you know, county meetings, you know, with the city councils and so forth, and I pipe in for my, like, 2-3 minutes, whatever they give me.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, and I try to bring in illustrations to show them. I bring in a big, huge, it's actually about 2 kilos of pennies, 2,500 of them in a box. And I say, now, see this box of pennies? I drop it there on the counter, go thud, and it's a big, huge thing. And then I say, now, let's imagine this to be all the atmosphere in the world. This penny right here, it's all the carbon dioxide, if that's all the atmosphere. And they look at that, and they go, hmm. And I say, and of that penny, we provide a little bit of it. It's just a 4% of that penny.
Of the one penny.
Of the one penny. So do you really think that 4% is driving that whole 2-pound pile of pennies? Of course not. That would be thermodynamic nonsense. It's absurdity to the highest. And to double down on it just shows me that you're committed to nonsense. Not committed to science. At least hear me out. At least think it through. At least question for a moment, because perhaps you or I could be wrong, and until you come to that point, you're never going to question.
Yeah. Yeah. Shutting down the debate. That's how we did it. That's how we did it with COVID. You know, if you didn't want to wear a mask, you just hated humanity. And it's like, wait a second. You know, it was very well explained that didn't do what they said it did, but, you know, a lot of folks weren't willing to kind of fly in the face of that, even though maybe they didn't believe, but they didn't want to be singled out. And I think we're at a point where, honestly, being singled out's okay. I think we're good with that.
I've gotten used to it, so I'm not in that fear category.
Me too.
They've done some experiments where they put everyone in a room. And everyone's in on it but the one person they're watching. And then they show pictures, and they say, which one's bigger? And they all point to the one that's just a shade smaller and wrong. And the other one is right, and the guy goes, oh, yeah, I picked that one's bigger. But they all pick the wrong one on purpose
to see if he'll cave.
And then after about 3 rounds, the guy's picking with everyone else the wrong one. Now, there you go.
No.
You just go along with the right. You know, here's the thing. With getting back to our 19 or 2020 mess that we found ourselves in, I was overseas living in Australia at the time. And I, of course, being a kind of a guy likes to research, I researched the coronavirus. Turns out that Peter Bright Institute owns the patent to the coronavirus. Now, how do you own a patent to a virus? You have to genetically modify it.
Right.
Well, it's not really a genetically modified organism because it's not an organism. It's actually a virus, which is much smaller than an organism. It's just it's a package of basically RNA. And so what happens is that little package goes, it's called messenger RNA. It goes into your body and it starts making more of that virus, and that's how you get it, right? The only way to fight it is with an antivirus or becoming immune by creating antibodies. So these antibodies identify the virus, and then it says, okay, now we got you, we kill you off, and we win. Now, a real vaccine gives you a weakened version. Remember, it's not alive, it's dead, it's not even It's nothing alive there. So you have to do what they call gain of function to get the patent on it. But my point is that the body has to identify it, then to create more antibodies to fight it. But the mRNA vaccine did none of those things, but it injected in your body messenger RNA. So now you are now, by default, a GMO. You've been genetically modified. Through fear of a virus that was augmented, gain of function, and released into society, and then the media just spread the news like it was like the end of the world, we got to do something, it's a crisis. You know, never let a crisis go to waste. This way we get rid of Trump, we get rid of the mail-in ballots. We're going to get 81 million votes for Biden, so no one's going to ever beat Biden, ever. I mean, I think Obama got like 69. That was the most ever.
Yeah.
And then Biden gets 81. It's like, whoa, he didn't even campaign. He was hiding in a bunker.
Yeah, that seems legit.
Everything about it was a scam.
Yeah.
But you know what? See, the media is driving this narrative. And tell the media, the mainstream media is the enemy of the people. I'm convinced of that.
And I think people are kind of figuring that out, like with the death of MSDNC and all that. I mean, you can see some of it shifting. We have to take a really quick break here and then come back to for the top of the hour with our guest, Kurt Stryker. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
thought we'd back to back the crazy songs. Seemed like it was overdue. Overdue on this topic. Oh my goodness. All right,
there's so much.
I know, it just there is so much.
Well, let me throw out some things that for your audience to kind of consider, and I'll touch base back on water vapor being a greenhouse gas and the deserts and so forth, because I didn't really finish that point, but I'll just say this much. You know, climate change is a real phenomenon. It does change. I believe in climate change more than anybody you know, like I said. Carbon dioxide is crucial and necessary for life on Earth. Carbon dioxide is not a pollutant as the EPA wants to take control of it. As a matter of fact, carbon dioxide invigorates the biosphere and therefore increases food production. I mean, that's why greenhouses, like I say, use carbon dioxide to get a bigger crop faster with less water, because the stomata don't have to stay open so long, losing water through transpiration. They absorb the carbon dioxide, and they make the food quickly, and it's much more efficient. It's an amazing, invigorating thing for the biosphere. You know, the human contribution is 4%, which breaks down to about 16 parts. So 16 molecules of carbon dioxide for every million parts of atmosphere. That's a huge disparity of thermodynamicness there. You look at that and you think, there's no way it can affect it. Of course not. No one would even think that, especially when you realize the nature of carbon dioxide. You know, it holds heat for seconds only when the sun is on it. Remember the Sahara Desert and the eclipse thing I mentioned?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sahara Desert at night, if you go to Sahara Desert during the day, you're going to be over 100 degrees. You'll probably end up, you know, just barely surviving if you get some shade and a little bit of water. But if you don't have proper shelter that night, you would die from basic exposure there by hypothermia, because it gets down to about 25 degrees Fahrenheit, which is below freezing, obviously, at night. And why is that? Because there's no water vapor to hold the heat. Now, if you're in Hawaii or in Hilo or Kona or Maui or anywhere on the equator, there's lots of water vapor, lots of humidity to hold the heat all night. You can spend the night without even wearing any covers, just a pillow looking up at the beautiful, you know, palm trees and the stars. So climate change caused by carbon dioxide, absurd. As a matter of fact, like I say, the main job of carbon dioxide is to give life and reinvigorate the plant life. So really, carbon dioxide only holds heat for a few seconds. After the sun goes down, it's gone. So it doesn't even, it's not even a very good greenhouse gas at that. It's not a, carbon dioxide is really not the Earth's thermostat. It does not control the, it's not the control knob of the climate.
Yeah, that is how they pitch it all the time, though. It's the, it's like, turn the knob up and down.
Yeah, it goes up and down respectively. No, it's not a thermostat. It's more of a thermometer. When the temperature goes up naturally, we get more carbon dioxide as a result as oceans degas. As life flourishes, we get more carbon dioxide. As it warms, we get life flourishing. We get more carbon dioxide, and life is good. So a lot of things like that. And by the way, carbon dioxide is heavy. You know, it's 1.5 times heavier than the atmosphere itself. So you get all these different gases out there. Helium, of course, goes up, right? You see it with helium balloons. Hydrogen goes up. But carbon dioxide goes down. Now, God in his infinite wisdom, of course, made plants on the ground, and they need what? Carbon dioxide. So it needs to stay down. Imagine if it was lighter, it would just be going up. The only trees that can survive would be super, super, super tall, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's why we have a tree line around different mountain ranges. Plants cannot survive at this level. Why? It's not oxygen, it's carbon dioxide. It's not enough of it. So
I never really thought about that. That's a good point.
Climate is a dynamic and highly complex study. It's not just turn the knob of carbon. Oh, we got 500 parts or 50 parts per million more than, you know, they say 350 is optimal. Well, show me the data. They can't. Right? It's just they're dogmatically asserting these so-called facts, which are not even facts whatsoever. They're just brazen lies, in my opinion. You know, it's basically climate change scam is uses fear and ignorance to control us, move money, and of course, by moving money, controlling us, gain power. Man-made global warming hoax survives because of censorship of real empirical science. Keep them in the dark, keep them, you know, feed them like crap, and bingo, you're going to keep the mushroom diet, keep that thing going. Now, man-made climate change, the scam, is exposed by empirical science, like thermodynamics, the firmly established laws of physics. That's what climate is. It's thermodynamics, moving heat, transferring heat, and so forth. Sun primarily, and then the water vapor being the number one greenhouse gas. Carbon dioxide, not even a player. And lastly, I would say that the fallacies that you run into, used by climate alarmists, I would call it the ad hominem, is one of the best. Attack the arguer, not the argument, right?
Yeah.
They appeal to emotion. Oh, wait, people are dying if you don't do this. It's all they dogmatically assert this appeal to emotion or appeal to authority. Everyone says it. 97% appeal to authority. Or they throw a red herring out there saying climate change is equivocation to, like, pollution. You know, a red herring out there, or a slippery slope. If we don't do something now, it's going to get far worse, and this is a point of no return. Or I like the argumentum, so to speak, ad populum. Everyone else believes it, you know. Why can't you, right? Everyone else got the jab. Why not you, you know? And I guess in closing, I'd like to encourage the audience to look up Tom Nelson podcast. He's interviewed all those people, Crockford, Ridd, all these guys that I mentioned before. Susan has been in there a number of times herself, who he interviewed there. Tom Nelson podcast on YouTube.
I listed that on here.
Yes, he interviewed me, and I gave that to you so you can actually find the website.
Yep.
So it's not just watch me, but watch other people. If you're a real nerd in this stuff and want to really gain knowledge, he's interviewed hundreds of real, live, actual scientists. I'm more of a popularizer. I'm more of a guy who takes the knowledge that I study and make it, I laymanize. I give it to the layman so they can understand it, as opposed to some guys are really into technical stuff. I like to take the technical, but I like to break it down to what's it really saying and how does this affect me and how can I convey this knowledge. And so what you get with me is a popularist way or a popularizer way of getting the knowledge to the people. I call it laymanizing or bringing it down to about a fifth or sixth grade level so even a young person can understand it.
Well, the part of it, too, is that it makes people who have questioned this not feel so out of step. Because if you're not a scientist, and let's face it, who's got time to go and do that for the most part? So then
right.
They feel like, well, they are silenced just because they can't hold their own in a debate. So hopefully this gives people at least some bite-sized knowledge. Like I think I told you when we were on the phone, Leighton Stewart was the first guy we interviewed on this topic back in 2014, and he had said, you know, ambient air is about 400 parts per million carbon. If somebody was to drop on the ground and they did mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, they are blowing into them 40,000 parts per million, and I was so grateful the math was so tidy. So you go from 400 parts per million to 40,000 parts per million of carbon, he goes, why don't they all die? And here it is 11 years later, and I'm still like, I don't know. And when you ask the true believers about that, because I have done that many times, they have no response for that other than the response I routinely get is, it's different. I'm like, well, that doesn't sound very scientific.
Okay, explain to me how it's different.
I know.
Just do the old Socratic thing.
Yeah, and they can't. They never can.
Their own corner of logic there.
Yep, they never can. It always blows up. So that, for me, has been a terrific tool the last 11 years. We have to run away. And thank you so much for coming on with us, Kurt Stryker. You can find us.
I'm so glad I looked at my phone when I did.
I am too, because I
was walking out of church. I was talking to a friend of mine, and see, I was talking about some issues that were important.
Yeah, see, and I was going
to
have to
turn the phone quiet,
drive to Santa Rosa, and burn your house down or something. But you guys already had
that,
so I wouldn't want to do that.
I'll come up there. We'll do one live in the studio.
There you go. All right, we will see you on another week. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Compliance. We just need your compliance. You will feel no pain anymore. No more defiance. We just need your compliance. Just give us your compliance. We won't let you.